Accession number 15111, real one.
Wing Commander Higginson, real one. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Swansea.
Which year?
1913. Right.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was a policeman.
Did the family come from Wales?
No. My father originally came from somewhere near Gloucester, I believe. I'm not absolutely certain. But one interesting thing that I think I ought to say with regard to my father's job was that shortly after he moved to from Swansea to Gorsainan, a little village, Welsh village, and it became became the habit there that he and the doctor used to more or less, and I shouldn't use these words, I know, but I can't think of anything better, more or less to rule the village, in the sense that if the parents found that one of their children was misbehaving himself, then they called my father or the doctor, and my father usually used to give them a clip around the ear, which we got if we misbehaved ourselves, and there was no problem from there on. And I think that sort of reaction, if used today, and if coupled with my idea of putting parents in the dock when the children are summoned for some misbehavement, then I think that would be a much better way of dealing with the present youth than sending them off on holidays to various places.
Did you go to school in Swansea?
I went to school in a grammar school called Gowerton. No, I beg your pardon. I went to school, first of all, of course, in Gorsainan. And from there, I won a scholarship to Gowerton, which is a grammar school. And I was there until I was just over 50, or just about 15 years of age, when I came to the point where I knew I would have to take my Welsh matric, which was the sort of examination of the time, and I reckoned I wouldn't have much chance of getting through. And so I happened to see an advertisement in the paper for Halton apprentices. So unbeknown to the headmaster, I applied to the Air Ministry, and the examination papers and so on were sent to the headmaster, and I was then given the opportunity of taking the test. This was in 1928, and I passed and was accepted as a Halton apprentice rigger, metal rigger, in those days, one of the early courses to take, a metal rigger course as opposed to a wooden rigger course. Airplanes were then beginning to be made out of metal. And I joined Halton in January 1929.
How long was the course?
I was there for 3 years and passed out as an aircraft apprentice. As a aircraftman first class. What are they called?
Leading aircraftman?
No, I took my leading aircraftmanship when I was at my first station. That was in Worthydown. I was posted to Worthydown, where they had Vickers Virginia. These were twin-engine bombers, and I became a fitter on one of the bombers, and sat my leading aircraftman's certificate and obtained that. And I also became gunner on the rear gunner on the airplane, which I was maintaining. And this was in 7th Squadron. There were 7th Squadron and 58th Squadron based there at the time. And I remained there. I played rugby for the local team. I didn't get into the Air Force team for a little while. And I remember distinctly that Shaw, aircraftsman Shaw, who was popular, was active then in Saudi Arabia, used to keep his motor bicycle at Worthy Down, and from time to time he used to appear. When those like myself who knew, we were always on hand to wave him goodbye and so on from the station. Anyway, it was a very happy station.
This is Lawrence of Arabia.
Lawrence of Arabia, yes, of course.
Did you meet him?
No, not. I saw him and stood near him. I didn't meet him and say, you know, who I am or who are you, because he was a mysterious sort of character. We didn't. It was some time before we knew who he was, but he appeared. He had a motorbicycle too, which wasn't. There weren't very many motorbicycles around in those days.
What kind of an impression did he create as a man?
I wouldn't like to comment on that. He was looked like an ordinary human being, and I didn't have an opportunity to judge his pattern of behaviour or anything of that sort. All I know is that he appeared on the station, picked up his motorbike, and waved cheerio and to those who had helped him, and away he went. Anyway, I stayed there for about 2 years, I suppose. And I was posted then back to Halton to take a fitter ones course. That meant, after I finished that course, that I could then look after the engines as well as the airframes. So I was what was called a fitter one. That was a year's course, and where did I go from there? From there.
Did you stay in Britain before the war, or did you go abroad?
No, I didn't go abroad. No, I didn't go abroad.
Did you stay as an air gunner before the war?
No. One interesting thing about that service was that these bombers were presumably meant to bomb the cities in Europe. When we did the annual attempt at when we made the annual attempt at being at war, we used to take off from Worthy Down and go up the channel and then come back and land at Burcham Newton. I can't remember the name of the place, somewhere near Oxford, because we didn't have enough fuel to get across the channel and bomb the city and get back. Anyway, shortly after this period, I was selected for a flying course to become a sergeant pilot, and I went to Sealand, 5 FTS in Sealand, and did a year's training there and became a pilot and joined 19 Squadron at Duxford.
Did you have any difficulty in learning how to fly?
Not particularly. I had some very good instructors, including, I'm not sure what he is, Air Chief Marshal, or Bing Cross, and that's one name I remember. There were a number of others. No, I didn't have any great difficulty. But after I'd been in Duxford for about a year, I suppose, or possibly less, and I was doing a forced landing exercises. I think it was gauntlets I think we had then. They just got rid of the Siskins, but no gauntlets we had. Harry Broadhurst, Air Marshal Broadhurst, was the squadron leader in charge of the squadron. And I was doing these forced landings, and they were watched by a number of people. And I failed to notice that there were sheep grazing in the field. They, with my coming in low and landing without the engine, they were getting nearer and nearer to the edge of the airfield. And needless to say, the last attempted forced landing I made, I struck the sheep. Everyone had sheep for supper. But
that was in a gauntlet, was it?
Yeah, that was in a gauntlet. Shortly after this, and I don't know whether it was because of my accident or not, because I didn't damage the airplane, but anyway, shortly after this, I was posted to number one anti-aircraft communication unit, which I believe was at Burcham Newton. And there we flew, I can't remember the name of the airplanes there, but we flew, our purpose was to tow a drogue and over the range, the firing ranges up on the east coast. I can't remember the name of the range.
Sutton Bridge?
Sutton Bridge, that's right. And then the aircraft would come in and fire at the drogue. I think an old contact of mine, Odbert, Flight Lieutenant Odbert, was an Irish international rugby player, and with whom I got quite friendly because of my rugby playing experience. Then moved down to Boscombe Down, I think, and the unit folded up, at least I think it folded up. Anyway, I was posted from there to 56 Squadron at North Weald. And this was in 1935. No, 1935 I started my flying course. Sealed in 1936. And then to Duxford.
Duxford 36, 37. That's
Biggin Hill. Aircraft entry, aircraft flight 37, Burcham Newton. There was the same unit, and back to Biggin Hill in 37, and then to North Weald in 56, the 20th of the 10th, 1937.
What was North Weald like as a place to fly from?
It was. It had no runways, of course, and it had one. Characteristic which no one was very fond of, and that was that on the east side of the aerodrome it had some large stacks. I can't remember what they were for, but they were certainly a big obstruction after you took off if you took an eastern takeoff, then you had to make sure that you had got, I should think, 100 feet before you reached these obstructions. The mess was rather nice,
What kind of planes were you flying there?
That was.
Was this fighters or bombers?
Oh, they were all fighters. So, Gladiators. Duxford was a gladiator, not a gauntlet. It's a North Weald. Well, I don't know. It might. I haven't got Duxford. My first logbook was destroyed when North Weald was bombed, I'm afraid. So I'm talking from my second logbook now, which starts in 1937. And with the Hart airplane and the Gladiators.
What was a Gladiator like?
I was then obviously down in 56.
What was a Gladiator like to fly?
Very nice, very nice. I liked it anyway.
Did it have any vices?
Not that I can remember, no. Not that I remember. Very nice airplane to fly. It wasn't very performance, well, of course, wasn't very good. It was good in its time, but with the experience that I've had since then, of course, it's sometimes unbelievable. This was the first line fighter aircraft of the UK.
Do you remember anything about the leadership and personnel in 56 Squadron at North Weald?
Yes, we had a flight commander called Trader Horn, H-O-R-N-E, and our CO was Lee Cox, who was a Great War pilot. And
what were they like as leaders?
Very, very friendly people. And one thing I remember was that as you 56 had had an outstanding record in the Great War. I think they had two VCs, McCudden and Ball. And in both cases, the squadron leader of Lee Cox had set up a sort of small museum in one of the hangars with McCudden or Ball's uniform in a case and the history of the squadron in the First War. And when you joined 56, the first thing you did, you were put into this room and to read the history of the squadron and take note of the Ball, McCudden and the pilots who had fought in the Great War.
Did that help create an esprit de corps?
Certainly did. And although I was only a sergeant pilot, once in the air, you were treated as your ability was as a pilot, rather than whether you were an officer or an NCO or whatever you were. It was really a very enjoyable period of my service life.
You were there at the time of the Munich crisis in autumn 1938. Do you have any memories of what happened at the Munich crisis?
Specifically, no. But looking at my logbook, almost every flying trip that I did was concerned with exercise of one sort or another, formation flying, target for camera gun, reconnaissance. Night flying and battle flight climb, air firing ranges. All the flying was concerned with the probability that a war would arise, despite what had taken place at Munich.
Did you feel yourself that a war was coming by this time?
Yes, I felt that it was coming, and I had already made arrangements for my family to be moved. I had, of course, by 1937 I got married. 1938 I had my first child, or my wife did, and we had made arrangements for them to come back to Wales in the event of war breaking out, or going up to my parents who had retired up to Newark in Nottinghamshire. And we, in fact, before the actual declaration of war, they moved up there. Yes, they moved up to Newark before war was actually, in 1938, before war was actually confirmed. One interesting thing I remember, I can't remember exactly the date that it took place, but I had a motor car and it became later on the squadron car. And it was an Opel which was imported from Germany, and it landed up on the docks at Southampton, and I got to know that I heard that if one had a small amount of money, you would go down and buy one of these, much cheaper than the British car. So this is exactly what I did. I went down to Portsmouth, and for £100 I got, what was the name of it? Mini? It was an Opel anyway, and it was became the squadron car. And later on, during the Battle of Britain, at the end of the day's flying, we quite often used to pile into this car and drive up to the west end of London, spend the evening in the nightclub, and come back ready for readiness the next day. The other thing I remember about the motor car was that we had to fit certain, I don't know what you call them, certain devices on the headlights, so that instead of them being allowed to show their beam for a long way, they were restricted in distance lighting up objects. So in other words, what we found that when we were going long distances by car, we used to get behind a lorry who usually had better lights than we did, and formate on the back and follow him up to wherever we were going.
Did the squadron keep the Gladiator right up to the outbreak of war?
No. In 1938, we were re-equipped with the Hurricanes. June the 10th was my first Hurricane flight, and my logbook shows that I certified that I understood the petrol and coolant systems of the Hurricane 1 aircraft, and I was then authorized to fly the aircraft. By that time I had done 471 single engine hours flying.
What impact did the Hurricane make on you and your brother pilots?
We were very impressed indeed. It was a nice aeroplane to fly. Its performance was very much better than the Gladiator. Of course, it was single wing. It had 8 guns, and we were very impressed by it indeed.
Were there any accidents on the Hurricane pre-war?
Not that I can remember. It was a fairly easy aeroplane to fly.
What happened to you on the day that war was declared? Can you remember that?
Yes, I can. Turning over again my logbook. Camera gun exercise, home defense exercise, air to ground weapon firing, night flying.
These were the kind of exercises you were doing at the end of 1938.
That's right.
How confident did you feel about tackling the German Air Force?
Well, I didn't know anything about the German Air Force, so I felt quite confident that I could cope with what I thought they might be like. I had no idea, of course, what, in fact, their tactics were going to be. However, 39 again.
This is March 1939 in your logbook.
That's right. Sector reconnaissance, firing a sea marker, night flying, Sutton Bridge exercises. We were night flying tests, and we were landing with glim lamps. That means there were lamps put along the runway which didn't show any light upwards, but showed light, we which came out from the side, and we had to land at night with this amount of light as opposed to the present day.
This is in June 1939.
That's right. And then I noticed in the logbook that squadron formation, intensive flying, became the pattern in July. And this, oh yes, the variable pitch airscrew suddenly appeared in August 1939. This was a new device and improved the performance of the Hurricane. And then on the 4th of September, we made our first war operation at 02:50 hours in the morning.
Can you remember it?
No. I can't.
What was the Hurricane like to fly at night?
Again, it was a pretty straightforward, reliable aircraft, serviceable, and its performance was very good. It wasn't a difficult airplane to fly by any means. I flew the Spitfire later on in my career, and I think at that time, that is to say when we were equipped with Hurricanes, I was glad it was Hurricanes rather than the Spitfire, because it wasn't so delicate on the ground. With the Spit, if you push your nose up a bit too early, you were likely to get the end of your propeller into the ground. Well, that didn't happen with the Hurricane. You, far as I can remember, you could put your stick forward till your fuselage was more or less horizontal and take off in that way.
When did you first run into the enemy?
I'm just looking through my logbook. We were started in 1940 in January. Convoy patrols were patrolling the convoys of shipping convoys up the east coast, and there appears a flap waiting, no luck. That flap usually meant that we were warned the enemy aircraft were approaching, but this was approaching the convoys rather than the UK itself. And one interesting thing about the convoy patrols, which we did very many indeed, we were invited, I with a number of other pilots were invited to a convoy patrol briefing, which, if I remember rightly, took place somewhere in the Thames, or just off the north part of the Thames. And the person who was in charge of the convoy and was in charge of the briefing introduced us to the skippers of all the boats as being the pilots who would protect them during their convoy up the east coast, their journey up the east coast, of the skippers said he wanted to ask a question, and the question was, how big is your airplane when you're near the convoy? How can I distinguish it from a German aircraft? And this was an impossible...